So now the Padres are down to their final out. 3-2 to Cronenworth. He struck him out and the ball game is over. Edwin Diaz, for the first time in 39 days, locks down a save. 39 days for number 39, and the Mets get a badly needed shot in the arm from their closer as they beat the Padres 2-1.
I was going to ask you what happened to you. So it was strictly a belief thing from your catcher in that moment before the final out?
Yeah, he came to me and said, I trust you. You know, you are the guy here. And just let's get this guy out, and that's what we did.
What do you think you guys are doing well as a group right now?
We're bouncing ideas from each other, and we're sticking to a plan. We go out there, we have a plan, we have a purpose, and our intent usually follows the plan that we have. We're playing well. Like I said yesterday, this is a good wave that we're riding right now. We just got to make sure we stay on as long as we can, and then once we that wave is done, we got to find the other good wave.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June 16th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fan-Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Happy Father's Day to all out there. Hope you had a great day, great weather, great baseball. Maybe you spent it at the ballpark. In any event, these are the weekends that make the baseball season fun. Great weather, time with your family, and of course, winning Mets baseball. Mets winning 11 of 15, and they're on a roll. And I don't know, is it the Grimace first pitch? Everybody says, you know, Grimace is becoming this cult hero, just like the rally squirrel and the rally monkey. And wasn't there something else, a parakeet or something at some point? But anyway, Grimace is going down, a McDonald's character. Who would have thunk it? As maybe the turning point in the Mets season. I'm joking a little bit. But, you know, look, we'll talk a little bit today about a couple of things. First, about, and I've been on record, even going back to last week when we talked about the London series, not to be pulled in by fool's gold, especially, and I still stand by that, until this team hits 500, I don't want to hear about talking about postseason. But we are past the getting to know you phase. We pretty much know what the blueprint is for this team. We know that the starters can't go deep. They can go five or six innings. The bullpen, when everything is aligned properly, and I think that's going to be a big theme here, you could probably get the gist on the opening montage of what I'm going to talk about a little bit. When the bullpen is aligned correctly with Diaz, the Mets can win a lot of close games, and they've played a lot of close games. And the offense should be good enough to put up a crooked number. I mean, that pretty much is what this team was, how it was built. And you know, we looked at them through 8 weeks, through Memorial Day, and certainly a very lackluster May, and we figured out who this team was. They were supposed to be better defensively. They've been inconsistent there. They walk way too many batters still, so they're going to be dancing around base runners. And the core players have not really produced up to expectations, although that's changing for some of them. So we pretty much know what this team is. You know, we'll get into maybe, if this continues to progress in the direction that right now it appears, what does this team need? And also address how, while they're competing for a playoff spot in this very watered down, mediocre, I mean, the whole sport is very balanced. You know, what does this team need? And then, you know, how can they still listen on some of their pending free agents and maybe still compete and build for the future responsibly, because maybe that's where this is going. And by all indication and all reports is that Steve Cohen's not going to wave the white flag until the very last minute. It's not someone like me who said a couple of weeks ago, hey, let's start making some phone calls, David Stern. Let's start hearing what the market is for Pete Alonso. Let's start hearing what the market is for Luis Severino and Sean Manaea, maybe Edwin Diaz, Harrison Bader, so on and so forth. You know, he's not on board yet with ripping this thing down to the studs. And if you look at the wild card standings as of about 6:30 on this Sunday evening, you know, look, the Mets are right there. I mean, it's an amazing situation. I mean, I think the last time we saw something like this, and it was later in the season, was the first year, and I think I mentioned this last week, the first year of the actual expanded playoffs with the wild card in 1994, where it was shortened by the strike. It was the AL West that had a couple of teams almost 10 games under 500 battling for a division title, the very mediocre division. So right now you have, you know, the Cardinals at 500 with the second wild card, San Diego, who the Mets just swept, under 500 with the third wild card, the Braves, 38-31, Mets are only six games back there, Braves looking very fallible, you know, and away we go. So, you know, right now you're feeling good, and there's really no reason not to feel good. I mean, if you're not going to feel good after a five-game winning streak with the way J.D. Martinez, you know, with 10 straight, you know, plate appearances, getting on base, game-winning home run, popping home runs, popping doubles the opposite way, Lindor doing Lindor things, Alvarez back and managing the pitching staff, Vientos, although he's cooled down, starting to give you some production at third base for the first time in a really, really long time, bullpen coming around, all those things. You know, you have every reason to start to get excited. However, you really need to calm down until this team hits 500. And that's really the key here at this point, because until this team hits 500, I don't care if they're in a wild card spot with the way the standings work, game out, two games out, three games out, I don't care what the standings say. And I don't know where this season is going. And maybe you could say, Mike, look, there's a lot of parity in baseball. It's not like the old rules. Eventually, teams like the Cardinals, the Padres, you know, who knows, maybe one of the surprise teams in this muck, the Giants, the Pirates, the Cubs, you know, Cincinnati, you know, other than Colorado and Miami in the league, everybody else is in it, which I know bothers some people when you talk about mediocrity, but in a way, the sport and where you want sports from a business perspective to go, the sport was built with expanded playoffs, even when the wild card was introduced, to keep as many teams as possible interested throughout the summer, so ballparks wouldn't empty out, especially in this modern time where there is a lot of, and we've talked about it, a lot of things to do. So here we are just days away from summer, and the longest, you know, the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, and Mets fans, you know, maybe you took a break when you were frustrated with this team in May. Maybe you don't believe and you've been peeking in and peeking out. Maybe you've been watching every inning of every game, but regardless of where you've fallen over the last couple of weeks since they had the diamond, you know, that horrible loss, those losses to the Dodgers, games they should have won, and then the Jorge Lopez shenanigans, and then, you know, the split with Arizona. And, you know, they've won 11 out of 15 there. And, you know, they're playing, 733 baseball. And, you know, we've talked about how this team needed to, as I wrote about this over at the newsletter, over at, you know, Substack, about how they need to play pretty much the rest of the year 650 ball to get to that 85 win mark. And, you know, that would be just a bare minimum, I think. I think as the season rolls along, these teams are going to start to get reinforcements and potentially get on a roll. You know, teams are going to, historically, they win between 85 and 88 games minimum to get into the postseason. So this period of mediocrity where you're below 500 and feeling good about yourself, because look, the Mets are right there. They're a game and a half out of a wild card spot and only a game back of San Diego in the loss column, who's got the third spot. It is still a little bit of fool's gold. It is. Now, everything that we talked about that needs to happen has turned around. I mean, the core is not 100% doing the things that you expect. But J.D. Martinez, I mean, where would the Mets be without him? I mean, between his leadership in the players' meeting that Steve Gelbs keeps touting has been a turning point. He's been one of the top 15 run creators in the sport. I mean, elite offensive skills. You could see, I mean, this is a guy, I think when his career is over, he's not a Hall of Famer. I think he'll fall short. You know, I haven't done a thorough analysis, but he's a guy that when his name pops up on, you know, whenever that 5 years is up and is a Hall of Fame discussion, there is going to be some talk and some fraction of the writer block that's going to support him because he's just an elite offensive player. I mean, he's especially against left-handed pitching. That's one of the things that, you know, helps out quite a bit. I mean, Lindor quietly is doing Lindor things, playing better defense. I know he's made a couple errors the last few days, and on both sides of the ball, his value is top 10 in baseball. I know that drives people nuts when I say that. Look, the numbers are the numbers. Everybody's graded the same way. I mean, Lindor, maybe we don't look it and feel it all the time. When he's on, the Mets win. You know, it used to be when he and Alonso are on, the Mets win. Now it's Alonso not hitting like he used to, heating up a little bit, but Lindor and JD Martinez on. So, and like I said, you know, Vientos, I think he's played actually a pretty good third base. I know he's not great defensively. He's not as good as Beatty, but I haven't seen anything to indicate that he's not holding his own and justifying his bat there. And, you know, the starters are still, you know, going a bit laborious. I mean, Tyler McGill had a nice outing today. Reminds me so much, McGill, of the early days of Zach Wheeler. I mean, not able to go more than five innings, keeping teams to maybe one or two runs, walking a tick too many batters, lots of three and two counts, you know, before Wheeler got hurt and then Wheeler came back and started to figure things out and be more economical to where he is today. But, you know, the starting rotation's doing just enough to do their part in the blueprint. And, you know, the bullpen wasn't great today. I mean, there was really a throwing error that opened up the floodgates by Diekman, but Mendoza's done a nice job putting in the Diekmans and the Ottavinos and the Drew Smiths and the Garrett Reed and all these guys, you know, excuse me, Reed Garrett, you know, and all these guys that, you know, ultimately, you know, I got that one. guy's been on the team all year, and I got his name. Actually, he's one of those guys, I got to tell you, that I actually have occasionally got his name wrong over there. Garrett Reed, Reed Garrett, you know, it's one of those things, you know. Reed Garrett, not Garrett Reed, Reed Garrett on that thing. I don't know why I got that one, you know. But anyway, you know, Mendoza plugging guys like that into the right spot. And Daniel Nunez is, you know, doing his version of, you know, where have you seen this before? You know, maybe like when Mariano came. I'm not comparing him to Mariano Rivera, but how Mariano came up and started getting guys out, you know, going multiple innings at that point. You know, the Mets started to see that when they had Mejia as the closer, and then Familia came up and started to do his thing. So Nunez with, you know, a lot of command, throws strikes, heavy fastballs, not overpowering, but, you know, has a slider getting guys out, you know, even though he's prone to the occasional home run. So when you do that, you've got to get excited. But let's face it, and this is really the theme here in the opening, that all of this won't matter. And you saw it in May, because the reason they struggled in May is, yeah, the bats went silent at times, and guys like Reed Garrett, you know, came back down to earth, and, you know, the defense has been inconsistent, especially guys like Marte. But what was missing, and really it was a couple of years worth of blown saves that he did, you know, what was missing was Edwin Diaz. And on Friday, I didn't have a chance to watch the game on TV. I was listening on the radio, listening to the ninth inning on the radio, and I'm driving. And when Howie Rose said that was 100 miles an hour, I went, whoa, whoa. You know, maybe he's back. Maybe he's back. And, you know, I went back and watched the highlights. I don't think he was perfect. I still think he has trouble maybe commanding his pitches from time to time. But, you know, at the end, what you saw on Friday, the kind of save and the strikeout with tying run on, yes, I know McNeil with his defense bailed him out a little bit, but, you know, Diaz is the kind of guy where he's always been prone to weak contact, getting batting average on balls and played to death. You know, whether it's a little, you know, and that was part of what was so frustrating about his 2019. Sure, he'd give up the home runs and the walks, those are his fault. But there were plenty of times where, you know, he would be doing the right thing and some little dinker would fall in and then the floodgates would open. But for the first time in a while, and I know he pitched well in the prior outing against Miami and got the win. Seeing Diaz at vintage Diaz, the Diaz that we saw throughout 2022, the Mets never lost after he came into the ballgame after that one mishap early in the season in May when he blew a game against the Giants in extra innings. It was, you know, this is the guy that, you know, we came to know and love. The fact that they saw this guy, that this guy hits 100 on the scoreboard, from a standpoint of the entire organization, the fan base, everybody who has something invested in this club, that's the sigh of relief. That's the first sign that things are finally back to normal, that things haven't been normal. The day that this guy's knee or his, you know, tendon gave out, the day that happened, his patella tendon, the day that happened, nothing has been the same in Mets land. Yeah, I've talked about how things, you know, there was kind of a turn of events after they didn't sign Carlos Correa after Christmas in that offseason. But really, the Mets have not been the same since Diaz crumpled down on that mound in the WBC. And there have been way more issues than Diaz throughout the last 2 years. We know that. There's been issues on the pitching side. There's been issues on the offensive side. There's been issues on the defensive side. There's all sorts of issues. But the fact remains that the Mets in 2022, when they got a lead late because of Diaz and who he is and how dominant he was in the ninth inning, A, they never lost games that were close. And because of the way their offense is a little bit, because they're not a bully offense where they, you know, they could put up enough to win, but they can't necessarily blow teams out. You know, you're seeing a little bit of that this year. They play in a number of close games. It's starting to get a little bit better. You know, having a closer that could be as close to perfect as possible is a prerequisite for success for a team like that. And when you have, at that time, the best in the game, you know, maybe you want to say number two to Hader. We've talked about that. There's nothing better. And then everybody else falls in line. The Ottavinos fall in line, and the Drew Smiths fall in line. And you, this Daniel Nunez, I mean, think about this. The Mets could get to the point where you could have him for six outs and Diaz for three in the ninth, and you get nine outs. And if your starter could get to the sixth inning with a, you know, 3-1 lead or a 4-1 lead or a 4-2 lead, I mean, that's the blueprint. I mean, that's the blueprint we've outlined since the beginning. And then you don't have to burn through the bullpen every night. And that allows you to spot your Diekmans, your Ottavinos, your, you know, Reed Garretts, your, you know, whatever, you know, whatever else is in that bullpen. Danny Young, when he comes back, whatever, you know, it's like a cast of a thousands with bullpens right now. 100 miles an hour and the Diaz save is what I think ultimately is the turning point, if there is a turning point that we could turn to, that we could point to. It's not Grimace. I'm sorry. I know you guys like thinking Grimace and Grimace's first pitch. I don't think it's going to be J.D. Martinez walk off against the Marlins. You know, maybe that's one. Is it the win in London? You know, maybe you could put it there. I mean, those are all nice stories, and they certainly help. But if this thing really gets to where we want it to get, after we let it go, after I let it go, after you let it go, after we all let it go just a couple of weeks ago, especially after how horrible things went down against the Dodgers at Citi Field and how embarrassing it was to see Lopez melt down and how the whole glove incident brought back shades of that ugly, ugly media interactions that we saw on a consistent basis in 2019 that led to a player and a manager nearly coming to blows with the media. It all smelled like it was in 2019 and 2020 and pre-Steve Cohen days. But to the guys' credit, and again, Gelbs has talked about this over and over again, they seem to take a step back and say, hey, this is about to turn ugly. We don't want it to turn ugly. We want to come here and have a good time and play and win. You know, they know about the anvil that's on their back. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, and even Keith was talking about it today in the booth, it was an interesting way to look at it. This J.D. Martinez, hey, screw it. Everyone thinks we're bad. Nobody thinks we're going to win, so who cares? Let's just go out and play ball, because what are we going to do? Prove them right? No, you're going to prove them wrong. If you go out and lose, everybody expects you to lose. But if you win, you know, all of a sudden things are different, and that's what they've done. So now where you're at. So you're at 33-37, and you still have a little bit to go. I mean, if you're going to win 2 out of 3, you got 4 more series to go before you could even get to 500. And it's not overly challenging, but you got some tough matchups. They go into Texas the next couple of days. Then they go to Wrigley Field. This is a tough road trip, Texas, you know, Dallas and Wrigley Field. So you hope that you can go 3-3 in the trip and stay at 500 and stay within four games of under 500. Then you have the Subway Series, a couple of games of the Yankees. And no matter how good or bad either of these teams are throughout the history of the Subway Series, they always seem to find a way to split or, you know, really not let, I mean, with a few exceptions where the Yankees steamrolled the Mets. And there was a few times the Mets steamrolled the Yankees. Taking those away, for the most part, you could expect a split in those games. And then the Astros come to town. I don't know if Justin Verlander, our old friend, will be there. He's on the shelf right now. But maybe you could take 2 out of 3 from the Astros, you know, go 3-2 on the next homestand. And then this is where it'll get interesting, because at that point, you're 3 games under 500, and you've got a 14-game stretch going into the All-Star break, where they play the Nats a few times, the Pirates, the Rockies, and, you know, again, the Pirates and the Nats are very similar to the Mets. They're in the muck, so it's not like you can say, oh, that's a soft part of the schedule. Those are teams you have to beat. They already went into Washington and swept them. Pittsburgh's got some good starting pitching out there. Colorado's a mess, but going to Colorado's never a fun thing. And those 14 games, you want to make some hay. You want to go like maybe 10-4, 9-5. All of a sudden, you're a couple of games over 500 at the break, and that's, you know, 49-46, 48-47, something like that. And that puts them right there. And then at that point, you could have a more serious discussion about going out and augmenting this roster with what they need, which we will at least start to talk about in the second half of the program. You know, one thing I think, though, is important throughout all this, and I'm sure David Stearns will do this, is that even with the current run, again, can't be sold on this team actually being a postseason team yet. They still have more work to do. But you still, even as they progress towards 500 and above, and maybe they're in that 49-46, 48-47 record, let's say, when the break hits in mid-July, you still have to listen to what's out there. And I think the interesting thing I'm already hearing, and I'm reading, you know, reading through the lines, you already got, and the media loves to float what the Mets could get, and the opposition loves to use the media to dash any kind of market value for Mets players. I mean, this has been going on since the beginning of time. No matter who the Mets put on the market, you can't get anybody for him. There's always a reason why the player is flawed. And the other team's flawed the player. He's a free agent. You can maybe get an average prospect for Pete Alonso. Oh, you can get nothing for J.D. Martinez. You can't get nothing for Severino. Maybe you get something for Severino. You can't get nothing for this guy. Well, but when the Mets need something to augment their roster, they got to give up the world. Well, what do you think? They're just going to help the Mets win? There's a bit of a Cohen tax with this. There's an anti-Mets portion of this. We all know that. But here's the beautiful part about this season in comparison to other seasons that have come into play here. The Mets don't have to trade anybody. Their farm system is actually doing quite well. They've got a number of pitchers both in the starting rotation and the bullpen that they could pull from. Maybe they're light on the offensive side, but Acuna is starting at the ball a little bit. And, you know, certainly, you know, this kid Luke Ritter, not necessarily a prospect, but someone who could be a component player, is hitting the ball over the fence, it seems like, nightly. Ryan Clifford, maybe the future replacement for Pete, making a show of himself down in AA. So there is, and then there's the younger way, you know, few years away offensive prospects. Maybe the system's bereft of offensive prospects, but you have a draft coming up. And don't forget, if they do lose Pete Alonso to free agency, or they offer Severino the qualifying offer and he goes somewhere else, I don't know if they would do that. They may. You're going to get draft picks for these guys. And there's going to be value, and you're going to put a lot of pressure on this new regime to go out and to do a competent job in the draft, find some value, not just, you know, get the obvious in the first couple of rounds, but go throughout the draft and find value so that in, you know, 2 or 3 years, the pipeline can continue. So you don't have to go out and rebuild your farm system in a big time way like you did last year. You don't have ticking time bomb pitchers with long-term deals that are former, you know, Cy Youngs and future Hall of Famers that you're looking at, and you're like, you know, if I keep them, trade them, keep them, and those are the guys that you want to see if you could, you know, steal yourself a top prospect, which it looks like they did from the Rangers and the Astros. You know, the Rangers won a championship, the Astros didn't in that deal. So, you know, it's not a big deal. You trade Acuna for a championship, you do that all the time, you know, if you're an executive for a team. So, you know, the Mets are in a position where, you know, if you're going to see a tepid market, even if they're, you know, in the race, start to see what you can get, because you never know. You know, you just walk away. You know, even if you're not really in the race, you walk away and you play it out and you entertain the fans for the rest of the season. And even if they're a couple of games out, but they're still in the 500 in the pseudo wild card race, at least you give some hope. You're not just sending the signal that you're tearing this thing down. And you can do that without being scorched for not being responsible and rebuilding your farm system. Money's not an issue. It's not like the Mets are afraid. They've already shown with Verlander and Scherzer and McCann and so on and so forth that they will eat money to get a better deal when they trade somebody. So, and I don't think they have to do that this year. I don't think they have to go out. You know, do they want to trade Marte and eat money and get a better prospect? I mean, a couple of weeks ago, my answer was, let's do it. Let's see them do it. There are luxury tax implications for that. So you have to be careful. And Marte, although he's not a core player, you know, because of his decline on defense, offensively, I mean, look, you know, he's every bit the offensive player that we saw throughout, you know, the 2022 season. And he was a huge offensive piece for that Mets team. So it's an interesting time. It's been an interesting season, a season of pull me in, throw me back out, pull me in, let go. I mean, we're at a point just a couple of weeks ago, the fans were so distraught. They would the Mets were doing such damage to their mental health that people were on X, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, I need a break. I can't take this anymore. And now they've pulled you back in. And I know what you're thinking. They're going to break my heart. They're going to piss me off and go out, lose 5 of 6 on the road trip. And I could see that. I could see them going to Dallas and Chicago and playing crappy. I mean, that's kind of how the season has gone. But, you know, look, right now they've started to show that, you know, with Diaz right, and that's the key, with Diaz right in the ninth inning, and with now the development of Nunez and everybody else kind of slotted into there, and, you know, yes, losing Raley was big, but you could make that up because they do have other arms. There are other arms down on the farm that, you know, you the Gervaises and the Wilken Ramoses and the Trey McLaughlins. I don't know if they're going to see them this year, but there are other arms down there out of the bullpen. Who knows what a Christian Scott with an innings limit produces out of the bullpen, or a Jose Buto or something like that. You know, you have McGill and Peterson. You have enough here. Remember, Senga hasn't thrown a pitch yet. And you're going to have to figure him out when you get back. Maybe that moves a McGill or a Peterson to the bullpen. We'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see when Senga's back, hopefully right, how that all plays out. So, anyway, that's where we're at. Would not have thought we'd be here, especially after the Diaz meltdowns of May and how ugly things got against the Dodgers. But that 100 miles an hour, what I heard on the radio and then watched on replay on the MLB TV app, if there is a point in time where later in the year the Mets are making the postseason, and, you know, no matter how long the postseason run goes, they're playing some meaningful, fun, big-time games when football season starts in September, you're certainly going to point to just before the summer started, the actual official day of summer, that 100 miles an hour against the San Diego Padres and that save, that 2-1 save that looked very much like 2022, that might go down as the turning point of the 2024 Mets. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, if the Mets want to get better and make the postseason and actually do some damage, what do they need? Be surprised. It's actually a little tricky. We'll talk about that more right after this.